You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio, episode 535, coming to you on Wednesday, March 13th. We're going to look at the latest in USC football, including previewing spring camp. Spring camp coming up next week as we get into it. The spring game coming up next month, all that stuff and so much more. We're going to talk about our five storylines that we'll be watching going into spring camp, talk about the roster a little bit, open up the mailbag, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, wherever you get your episodes nowadays, we are there. Email address, reignoftroy@fanside.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227, Second What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journal along with my co-host in the Raina Troy Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Narodola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We're back to talk more SC football. I'm excited because I feel like there's always a lull after the season ends, right? Like, that's a natural lull to get into. And then spring camp happens, and you're like, oh, yes, yes. Gotta freshen up on all of the info again.
Yeah, and it always feels like there's, especially now with signing, with recruiting being what it is, it feels like there's very little to talk about. It feels like there's very little development for a longer time. And the arrival of spring, I feel like as soon as the spring like prospectus gets put out, as soon as we get a look at the spring roster and camp is even like a week away, suddenly the off season becomes less of an off season. Like we all want real football to be back, but from here till September, there will actually be a lot going on with this USC football team that is related to the real football. So it's always fun once you make it through February, well, January and February, you get to have some fun in March.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of stuff going down. So let's just get right into it. The Trojans once again, victorious in basketball. USC 80, Washington 74. Trojans, the number 9 seed in the men's Pac-12 tournament, beating the Huskies 80-74. on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you?
One.
Should we talk about the women's basketball?
Women's basketball. Let's go.
We got an email from Tony in Denora, PA. Michael, Alicia, this is Tony from Denora, PA. Congrats to the women's team for winning the Pac-12 title. Great game. Fight on, Tony. Yeah, the Trojans beating the Stanford Cardinal in Vegas over the weekend to be Pac-12 champions, Pac-12 tournament champions on the women's side, and potentially a number one seed in the NCAA tournament.
The women of Troy had a hell of a weekend. It was an exciting, thrilling weekend from them, and an impressive one because they found ways to win in difficult circumstances, in unusual fashion. Like on Sunday, they won without Juju Watkins being the end all be all of that team. And that, like, to me, more than anything, is a sign of what that team is capable of. If you can beat Stanford, a legitimate, you know, number one seed in the tournament, without Juju having to be the you know, best player on the planet, then your team as a team, as an entity, is capable of doing some fun things. I think by contrast, I look at what the USC basketball team is, and it feels like if Boogie Ellis or Isaiah Collier is not willing that team to paltry victories, then they're just basically out on their luck. And
yeah,
I feel bad because there's a lot of joy in watching USC women, and there's just a lot of whatever the opposite of joy is for me in watching the men, because even when they win, I just look at it and go like, okay, you won as a 9 seed going against a team that was playing knowing that their head coach was fired, and is just not an, you know, there's nothing impressive about Washington this year. Beating Washington in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament is like USC shouldn't even be in the position to be playing a game where they're the 9 seed in the Pac-12 tournament with that roster. I know there's injuries.
They shouldn't have to win 4 games. Yeah.
No, I know there's injuries and I know that there's been adversity, but I don't buy the excuses for this group. And I'm less critical of the players and more critical of just the Andy Enfield of it all. So my worry at this point is that Andy Enfield is going to Clay Helton his way to like an extension where it's just like, well, they're, you know, good players winning games occasionally because they're good players. And then, you know, well, we're you know, just going to continue living in a state of accepting mediocrity because that's the position that USC basketball finds itself in, just like the position that USC football found itself in for a long time in the recent past. And like, I don't know. I can't even get excited about USC winning games in this tournament because every game they win is a game further away from
get excited.
From the men. It's every game they win is a game further away from a new coach coming in, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, at least there's the women leading the way. Over at ESPN, they've done bracketology for the women's tournament. As it stands right now, the number one overall seed, USC.
Number one overall?
South Carolina, yeah.
Oh yeah, South Carolina.
but the Trojans would be the last four, the last...
Number one seed.
Yeah. So the number four overall seed. But still a number one seed, you know, all the same, with the Trojans opening the tournament potentially at the Galen Center, which pretty much got locked up by winning over the weekend. We know the Galen Center is hosting games. They're going to put the teams as close, the good teams as close to home as they can to sell tickets. So Trojans being able to still play on Fig, I think, is going to be huge for Juju and the gang. So we'll see how that comes to be. Trojans being a number one seed is massive. If you would have been told, I don't know, 2 years ago, okay, USC will have a number one seed in basketball, would you have even thought about the women's game at all? I don't think.
Well, so. I certainly would have thought of, wouldn't have thought of the men's game, for the record. So.
But like you, but I'm talking about like you look at the SC rosters that they've had.
Yes,
and you would like it would have been easy to just think of it.
Yeah,
because SC's had the talent to be a number one seed, but
you know, I mean, yes, that's true. But USC women went out and got a coach who knows how to coach a team while also recruiting a team. And
Gottlieb's been great. Yeah.
And Gottlieb's been great. And it's great to see her take a women's program that was sorely underperforming and turn it into what they could be. And I just want the men to be, I want USC to take the men's basketball team as seriously.
Well, we'll see if that can happen going forward. We'll also see if Lincoln Riley and his staff can take the Trojans as seriously going into spring camp. Before we get there, big shout out to Alex in the chat for throwing us a super chat. Big ups.
Cheers.
Cheers indeed. Let's talk about spring camp, the five storylines that we are going to keep an eye on as we get into spring camp. I think you got to start with number one, the quarterbacks. Miller Moss and Jaden Maiava. Jaden Maiava moving over from UNLV, the transfer. He'll be there in the spring along with Miller Moss, who's fresh off a sensational 6-touchdown performance against Louisville in the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how that one game sort of quieted all of the questions that I had about what would be going on with USC's quarterback situation? Like, think about what it, not that I'm saying this would have ever happened, but what if Caleb Williams had decided that he wanted to play that game and he plays that game? Like, the conversations that we'd be having about USC's quarterback situation right now would be entirely different. But instead, we're going into a spring camp where I look at the quarterback situation and I say, okay, I guess the question is, you know, Jaden Maiava, he was a starter at UNLV. He was an effective starter at UNLV, maybe needing some polish, needing some direction. And I think that's what he came to Lincoln Riley to provide him. But when I look at it, it's like, it's Miller Moss's team. It's Miller Moss's, it's his job as far as I'm concerned. I think the question would be whether or not Maiava can completely flip the script and prove that he's so good that a player who now feels so well established in that role, from a play on the field perspective, but also from a leadership perspective, you can just tell there's a lot of respect for Miller Moss in that locker room. That's half of the reason why I don't think there's even a question here. It's Miller Moss's team. And
I don't think it totally is.
You don't think so?
No. I think there absolutely is going to be the battle here. I think Moss solidified himself as a worthy participant in the battle and a worthy challenger to win the job. I think that's what the Holiday Bowl was for. I think that's what he sort of did. But to say that it's just his team, I think that you can't just go off of one game in a bowl game. You want to see more. You want to see more than that. You want to see him go into the spring, grab the position by the scruff of the neck, and not give it up, right? Like, and for Maiava, this is the absolute perfect time because Moss only has one game in his quiver, right? Like, he's got one game to fall back onto. Maiava has like half a season of really good play, mind you, at the Mountain West level, but he's got more experience that way as being a starter. I think this is, I'm not going to say that this is a good scenario, the best scenario to have, given that like Moss and Maiava are not the most experienced quarterbacks going into the season, but I think SC is in a very good position to where either Moss theoretically should take this job and prove that he is the guy who performed in the Holiday Bowl and he is the guy to sort of lead the offense and to beat out Maiava, or Maiava's going to come in and beat the guy who looked really good in the Holiday Bowl and proved that he was under recruited to come in out of high school and all that stuff. And he's going to be sort of the diamond in the rough that everyone let get by and sort of be the man there. I think that either way, you're more likely to be in a spot that is good going forward. I mean, the worst case scenario is that sort of neither one takes the has a great spring or whatever, and that's certainly always a chance. Mm-hmm. But given that this is an offense that we've talked about a million times before, that does nothing but replace quarterbacks under Lincoln Riley. He's done it going on a decade now since he's been an offensive coordinator.
Has Lincoln Riley ever turned to a quarterback that from game one, from like game one starter, has he ever turned to a quarterback that hadn't been in his system for more than a year? Aside from Caleb. Okay. So Hurts comes in.
Jalen Hurts.
That's right. Hurts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kyler Murray had been there.
Radler had been there. Caleb is, I think.
Had Baker been there? Who was the court? Was 2015 still Landry Jones? Was that Trevor Knight? Who was the quarterback in 2015? Now I gotta look this up.
Baker was the quarterback
in 2015.
Baker transferred in 2014.
But 2015 was Lincoln Riley's first year at Oklahoma. Okay. So either way.
Yeah. My reason for asking that is just that I completely agree with what you're saying. We can't assume that Miller Moss is the guy based on one game, one bowl game. Bowl games notoriously like who cares kind of game.
Yeah.
We can't rely
We talk about Stanford being the game that is the my brain is spacing right now. The false
Cyrus Hobby. False dawn. 2000.
The false
17.
We need Kenny in the chat to the false narrative. False.
What the name of it is?
We called it something. Our friends over at USCFootball.com called it something.
False dawn.
Oh my God, this is killing. This is the problem with
either way. What I'm there's certainly a possibility of just like the flash in the pan kind of thing that you're not actually good as you looked there. But
yeah.
But what my thinking is that, and Greg in the chat says, and before we forget, Fighting on MC sends us a super chat. So big cheers to that.
Big ups, thank you.
But Greg in the chat said that, is this like the Matt Flynn, Russell Wilson comparison? If we're talking about like just first impression, like vibes, yes, Miller Moss is the Matt Flynn here and Russell Wilson is the Jaden Maiava here. Yes.
Right.
In terms of like, skilled passer and versus like the potential sort of more dynamic mm-hmm. playmaker kind of thing. But I don't think it quite works though, because Miller Moss has been developing under Lincoln Riley for two seasons now.
Yeah.
And those 2 years working with Lincoln Riley to me are beyond way more valuable than Jaden Maiava's, half of a season of starting experience at the UNLV level.
Let me push back one little spot here. Lincoln Riley went out and got Jaden Maiava, who's a young guy, but a guy who clearly wants to be the starter and all that. He didn't go out and get somebody who is coming to be a backup. He didn't go out and get a Matt Fink because he's that confident in Miller Moss. And this 100% is Miller Moss's job, right?
He needed competition for Miller Moss, but like if we're looking at Jaden Maiava compared to the other quarterbacks that were on the market, if USC, if Lincoln Riley felt that Miller Moss was not a sure thing. Now we don't recruiting transfers is there's a lot of factors that go into why a player chooses one player or the other, but like,
right.
I don't know if Miller Moss, if there wasn't a certain level of confidence in him, like why wouldn't they have gone out and thrown the checkbook at a Will Howard or a
didn't we get the sense that they tried to do that?
Well, they were certainly pursuing him, but like it feels like
so then it becomes, is Maiava the guy that they liked better, or is Maiava a backup option there?
I got the feeling that it was that he was a little bit of a backup option from the other guys that they didn't get. But like, if you really wanted Cam Ward, I think you could have gotten Cam Ward. If you really wanted
Cam Ward, did go to the NFL though,
and then he came back.
True.
So I don't know.
Is that Miami now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's all up in the air for sure. I think they're going to give them the chance to compete. I just find it very difficult to believe that Mayava is going to come in straight away. Him being a young guy, pick up the system and pick up things to the degree that he overtakes Miller Moss without Miller Moss falling off. Like,
sure.
To me, it feels like a Miller Moss, Miller Moss's job to lose. Like, Miller Moss has to slip up in camp in order to open the window for.
I don't think it should be. I think it should. This should be a job where even if you think that, you need to go in. And
if I'm Lincoln Riley, that's the way I'm going in. I'm talking just from my perspective.
Sure.
I fully expect Miller Moss has already grabbed this job by the scruff of the neck and is just going to roll with it. Now, the question from a USC perspective in terms of the USC level of expectations that we have for 2024 is me accepting that Miller Moss is, I think, the guy. There's expectations if Miller Moss is the guy at this level, and there's expectations if Miller Moss is the guy at this level. And that is my bigger question. Like, as much as the competition is a question because there is a chance that Mayava comes in and goes wild and has a such an electric performance that you can't not play him. Like, that's entirely possible. But for me, it's much more about what standard does Miller Moss set for his level of play? Because the standard he set in the Holiday Bowl is pretty damn high.
Yeah.
And that is the question coming out is that real?
I just want to remind people, Jackson Dart had an incredible game at Washington State.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like let's not get ahead of everything here. I absolutely think that Miller
and Jackson Dart, by the way, is a starting quarterback in the SEC. So like, it's not like he's a bad quarterback.
I mean, he is, yes. But like at the way his season progressed after that, mind you, it was a weird situation. But he went from being the, oh my God, he's gonna, maybe he's better than anything that SC had anyways to, it's just an okay season from a young guy. And then Caleb Williams comes in and there's no question, right? Like,
yeah.
Jackson Dart is good. Yeah. I'm not saying Jackson Dart's not good, but I'm just saying you need just because there's that one game, don't expect the Holiday Bowl to be the be all and end all. I don't think the standard for Miller Moss should be the Holiday Bowl on the surface. I think you put up the Holiday Bowl, you frame it and you put it up and say, I want you to be like this every game. Ideally, like this is what the goal is. But the second that he doesn't look like the Holiday Bowl Miller Moss, I think it's a problem. If you're like, well, he sucks.
I think the expectation at this point is relative to Lincoln Riley more than the quarterbacks that are there. Mark Hoffman in the chat says, like, whoever the quarterback is, I'm not worried. And it's like, I'm sort of at that point too, because
that the argument in 2019?
Oh, that was supposed to be the idea behind
Graham Harrell coming in.
Or yeah. I mean, like Cliff Kingsbury coming in, and like, that was supposed to be the thing that you don't necessarily need to worry about your quarterback anymore because you have a quarterback guru who just gets a certain like floor. And I guess my question then is, maybe to rephrase it, is Miller Moss's floor, is he just a floor quarterback? Like, let's say a Spencer Radler type, or is he a ceiling?
I still go back to Spencer.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, that's why I don't think
Spencer Radler's quarterback rating would be a USC single season record.
That's my whole point about not needing to worry because the worst of the bunch was Spencer Radler, who was relatively the worst of the bunch, but still a perfectly capable starting quarterback.
Spencer Radler's prime is, oh God, he wasn't a Heisman finalist.
Yes. But okay. But this is, But this is the reality in college football, is if your quarterback is Spencer Rattler, you're not winning a national title. Unless you have a really good defense and a
national
really
title, unless you're
this Georgia. USC team yeah. is not winning a national title,
right?
With a Spencer Rattler.
No, I agree.
At least not coming as close as theoretically they came with Caleb
until
Williams
you have an offensive line and defensive line yeah. like Georgia's.
Yeah,
yeah, you're not. You're not. Speaking of, let's go to the offensive line first. I mean, or next. Who is protecting the quarterback, whoever it is, whether it's Moss or Maiava, who's protecting the quarterback? Jonah Monheim, we know, is back. Redshirt senior, should be a big season from him. Mason Murphy is back. Manuel Pregnon is back. A lot of newcomers going to be in here. Tiaga, Tianu, and Dendemela are all three early enrollees who will be here. In spring camp, you got young freshmen from the class from last year, redshirt freshman Micah Benuelos is going to be around. Killian O'Connor is another young guy who's been around for a couple years. Elijah Page, who came in last year too. What say you about this offensive line?
I would be a whole lot more nervous if Jonah Monheim wasn't back. I would be a whole lot more nervous if Elijah Page and Emmanuel Pregnon hadn't held their own in the Holiday Bowl. Again, I'm not trying to hinge everything on the Holiday Bowl, but it was an encouraging performance from that offensive line.
Right.
But there's still a million questions that this group needs to answer. And there's not comfortable depth. There is no real answer at center yet, unless they want to make Jonah Monheim a center, which I'm not opposed to. I just don't know that that's necessarily fair to Jonah Monheim. I don't know. And I wish I knew. It's the biggest make or break group. As much as the defense is make or break, as much as the defense is a lot to sort out, like USC can win a lot of games, even if the defense is bad, if their offense is as good as it's been over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But their offense took a step back last year with a worse offensive line, making life that much harder for a quarterback of Caleb Williams' caliber. If the offensive line doesn't improve and you put Miller Moss behind that group week in and week out, problems will begin to, like, cracks will show. Even though I think that Miller Moss can run a capable offense, like, USC has been running an offense that's capable of scoring 40 points in any game. If they even right. drop down to an offense that's only capable of scoring 35 points in any game, the defense becomes much more under pressure. So, I think that that the Monheim of it all is the biggest boon, but also the biggest question, because I would feel a whole lot better if they had landed an established center in the transfer portal.
One of the things, though, that you talked about last year with the guys over at the Ducks pod.
Quack 12.
Yeah, that. The idea of, like, transfers on the offensive line take a year to settle. Well, SC doesn't have any incoming transfers here. Pregnon is here from Wyoming, but this is year two.
Mm-hmm.
So that maybe this is the year that he can, you know, even settle in even further. On top of this, we didn't mention Gino Quinones is back for year six.
From that injury.
He missed all of last season. I think it was Achilles rupture, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was sort of the guy that, like, all season, but Gino Quinones.
He would have given USC a lot of flexibility that they no longer had.
But he's got two career starts to his name. Like, I think that he's still got a lot to prove with everybody else on this list. So, yes, it absolutely starts with Quinones, and I mean with Mannheim, and then goes from there. We'll see what how Pregnon and everybody else sort of fit in.
Before we move on from this, just off the top of my head, looking at the names that we have listed here of the offensive linemen that are currently on board, Mannheim and Page, I think you have to feel really good about those guys. I don't want to put too much pressure on Page, but he does look like a real prospect. So that's two starters that I think you should go in feeling pretty good about. Mason Murphy and Gina Quinones. I'm reasonably, and Pregnon, let's throw that. Those are three that I feel like they could do a job. They could do a job together. Micah Benuelos is another prospect. Killian O'Connor had to come in very briefly and didn't screw up. So like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Greg in the chat says that Elijah Page reminds him of David Bakhtiari because he looks like him. He's got the long hair to sort of go with it. But yes, we've seen the long hair from Mannheim too, right?
So there've been a lot of long haired
TJ Wheeler.
Chad Wheeler. Yes.
My
point is just that, like, yeah, I think you can put together a group of five or six from the current group that'll be there in spring. And maybe you hope that one of the early enrollees has one of those just like Andrew Voorhees type rises.
Mm-hmm.
But at most right now, I think you have six maybe, and it's a maybe six. That's not a position you want to be in going into a year when.
No, but I think that this makes it all the more important that this is the spring that you have more time to gel, right? Like, I think that
even if they gel, you need more. This is not sufficient in terms of the bodies that are there.
I agree, but when you're talking about at least the starting group here, if you're able to get the starting five out of the guys who are here now, which presumably
you're going to have a functional starting five from the group that USC has starting now. Yes.
But doesn't it help that, like, yes, they lost Justin Dietrich, but like, and, you know, Kingston is not here, but like, I think it helps that they're not bringing in a lot of new faces here, which should help with chemistry going forward. It's going to have to help. That's going to have to be the thing that.
Well, this is the thing. And for every other position on the field, we could have a conversation about that position and say, well, USC can strengthen in the summer transfer period. They can't do that here. Not realistically.
They could, but you don't want to. Yeah.
You don't want to. No, no.
You don't want to have to bring in
a left tackle that you just introduced to guys on July, whatever, when they come in to start doing workouts. Yeah. Like,
well, there's still going to be Makai Sina and Hayden Trader, the freshman fall enrollees. But you don't want to bank on those guys. You don't want to bank on those guys. Zanamella, I think it's going to be interesting to see what he can do in his first spring camp, USC's highest rated recruit in the 2024 class. So we'll see how that goes. One of three early enrollees there on the offensive line. Let's pivot to one of the big questions. Who's catching the passes on offense? For the longest time, USC's not had to worry about receiving core stuff because they've been so loaded. Alicia, in putting together the rundown here, this is probably the thinnest wide receiver group that I've seen at USC in years.
See, but this is interesting because this is like the inverse of the offensive line, where it's like the offensive line doesn't have enough bodies, and I'm slightly worried about the ones that they do being good, like really, really good. Where the wide receiver group, it's like the only thing I'm worried about here is they don't have enough bodies, but the bodies that they do have, I'm pretty damn excited about.
But the I hear you. I think there's exciting
and
names.
I think the receiving core, I think they should be going after some dudes in the summer transfer window and just adding the bodies that they need. And I think they can absolutely do that from a top level and a depth level.
I agree. At the same point, we've sat here many an offseason and said, oh, this guy, oh, that guy, oh, this guy at wide receiver. Last year was a prime example of that. And we thought USC's wide receiver core was going to sort of lead the offense, right? Aside from, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner and quarterback, obviously. But that was a wide receiver core that left so much to be desired in mm-hmm. it. And it was led by a, you know, all-conference first teamer the year before in Dorian Singer, who did nothing at USC, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the receiving core going into spring camp. There's seven dudes. Zachariah Branch, obviously should be pumped about him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deuce Robinson, I think there's a lot of reasons to get excited about him. Mekhi Lemon, Jacoby mm-hmm. Lane, those three freshmen last year all showed glimpses at different times. Lemon and Lane and Robinson, all three had big Holiday Bowls. Kyren Hudson, a guy who
I love him.
Has been very steady and sort of like needed to like get his time in the sun. He could be the number two guy mm-hmm. going into the season when you look at how everything else pans out.
Well, you need a Taj Washington replacement. And when I say that, yeah. I mean maybe less in skill set and more in just like the reliable dude that
even so, skill set or not, I think the reliability there is there. But that's it. It's five guys returning from last year. And mm-hmm. then you bring in Jaden Richardson, the transfer from Tufts, and Xavier Jordan, the early enrollee, and who's going to be an incoming true freshman this semester. So only seven guys, not that many dudes at receiver.
Yes, not that many dudes, but all potentially capital D dudes.
Sure.
So the issue here is the potentially I have to add to that, because Zachariah Branch, clearly the talent is off the charts, but we saw last year maybe consistency, maybe sort of finding his role as a receiver.
He's got a lot of growth area as being a receiver.
A receiver, yes.
He's a great guy with the ball in his hands, just in general, but he's got to grow at being a receiver.
Deuce Robinson, again, talent off the charts, but again, reliability,
by the
consistency.
Way, now that I think about it, I don't think Deuce is participating in spring camp because of baseball season, right?
I want to say it's not completely that he won't be there for spring, but I don't think it's also super clear.
But again, there's just, he's someone who needs,
he needs reps,
who was raw
as a,
last
as a
year.
Football player. Yes.
Jacoby Lane was raw last year, and Mekhi Lemon was raw. Like, those guys need the development and they need the spring to sort of take that big step forward.
Yes. But
it's just that, like, I think it would feel better about Miller Moss going into the season for me if this was the receiving core had a Taj Washington, if this receiving core had a Drake London.
Well,
if they had a
every receiving core, which is they had a Drake London.
No, I agree, but I'm just, you know what I mean? Like, Zachariah Branch is great, and I think he's going to be great, but like, is he a proven commodity at receiver?
Right, but I mean, Drake London wasn't necessarily a proven commodity after his freshman season. There was, it was a lot of potential and a lot of, we hope he can take the next step forward, and he did. I think that's the I know that's a little bit scary, but I'm just more comfortable with this group that maybe not all of them are going to take that step forward.
Do you remember last season though? Like,
And these guys all showed flashes while some of the veteran
negative Norbert.
While some, hold on. You can't say you want your group to have the like veteran presences that you sort of know going in what you're going to get from them, and then also say that last year's receiving group, which was full of those guys, by the way, was disappointing. Like,
for sure, they were.
There's no Mario Williams here, but also Mario Williams wasn't good. There's no Dorian Singer here, but also Dorian Singer wasn't good last year. So, like, I don't know that it's entirely fair to put that on these players when what we have seen from these players when they've been given opportunities has been largely positive.
Yes. I guess what I'm saying is, we went into last season having high expectations for the receiving core because all of the talent that was there. They didn't live up to that potential, but now there's significantly less talent there. In part, is just there? In sheer numbers.
I mean, in numbers,
Michael
yes.
Jackson III's not there anymore.
Yeah, but Michael Jackson III and Kyron Hudson are basically in the same category for me in that guys who could be very effective when given opportunities, but didn't get very many opportunities. You know, I think that I don't think there's any reason to say that Jacoby Lane couldn't fill the gap left behind by Brendan Rice. I don't think there's any reason to say that someone like Mekhi Lemon or Zachariah Branch couldn't fill the gap left by somebody like Taj Washington. And that's I think the most difficult of the receivers to replace in the long run. I also think that this is the group that if you get through spring and it is not sufficiently performing well enough, you can transform this group. When the transfer portal reopens, USC can invest sure. heavily in that position if they feel the need to.
Heavily is probably doing a lot of work.
Heavily there. In that position if they feel the need to.
Heavily.
Heavily, yes. We'll and the fact that USC, like there is always wide receiver talent out in the transfer portal. There's always tons of wide receiver talent.
Yes.
The fact that USC only added Jaden Richardson, who is a bit of a let's take a flyer on him guy from Tufts who has been playing at a lower division and people at that division believe that he was playing below his
let's
level.
Let's talk about the guys that SC has gotten as at wide transfers at wide receiver lately though.
Jordan Addison, Brendan Rice, Taj Washington, all transfers.
Mario Williams?
Yeah, Mario Williams. Again, it's hit and miss, but like they've gotten guys who are extremely Terrell productive Bynum? And effective.
Katie Nixon?
Yeah. So you've stated as many quote unquote busts as I have stated legitimate playmakers for USC. Sure.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm just saying, like, I don't think it's a formality if somebody goes down in the spring or if they don't look good in the spring. You don't feel confident in the spring. You can just find somebody in the summer.
No, I think you can get very aggressive in the summer and go out and get some more some more wide receivers if you think that these guys aren't getting the job done.
But a Jordan Addison isn't sitting out there.
But Jordan Addison came in the summer. So like that was certainly a unique case. But you
don't expect the Jordan Addison to be there in the summer.
Right. But. For instance, Jaden Maiava has a teammate over at UNLV who's decided to stick around at UNLV who USC could get very aggressive if they wanted to go bring him in. Like there are guys out there that USC could get aggressive to put out the bat signal that they need wide receivers if they need wide receivers. Thus far, they have not gone after wide receivers, which to me indicates something.
Mark says in the chat, who's the number one receiver, Branch or Robinson? I think it's
Branch. That's the question. It's probably Branch.
I think it's Branch.
It's just as likely Kyron Hudson Jacoby Lane or Mekhi Lemon. Like, I don't know.
Hudson could be the Taj Washington in which like he's the guy who just gets five catches every game.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the season, like he just ends up having the most yards or whatever. Like yeah. I could see that world.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. Next big question for us. Question number four of the five storylines we'll be watching this spring. What's going on with the new look secondary? There is a ton of new faces over at secondary. New cornerbacks, transfers. In John Humphrey and DeCarlos Nicholson from UCLA and Mississippi State, respectively. Marcellus Williams is also in as an early enrollee. At safety, there's four returnees and four new faces. Akili Arnold, Kamari Ramsey, Jarvis Boatwright, and Marquis Gallegos. Boatwright and Gallegos, two new early enrollees. Arnold and Ramsey. In from the Beavs and the Bruins, respectively.
This is a fascinating group because I can see a world where USC walks into the 2024 season with an all transfer secondary.
It feels that way. With the exception of, like, you know,
I like Jacoby Covington a lot.
Kalen Bullock is gone. All the guys that they brought in last year,
Jalen,
Christian Roller Wallace gone. Mm-hmm. But one of the best players that SC had, one of the most consistent players that sort of didn't get talked about much, was Jalen Smith on defense.
Jalen Smith was a baller last year.
He's back at safety. Anthony Beavers had a big Holiday Bowl. Zion Branch had sort of moments. He was one of those guys that I think a lot of fans called for more playing time. It didn't really see much of it, but then he had a season-ending injury that sort of prevented him from playing a bigger role at safety. But it's going to be hard for them to find where they fit in when you have Akili Arnold and Kamari Ramsey coming right in, especially when Ramsey's a guy who's worked under Danton Lynn over at UCLA. And then Akili Arnold, guy who started for the Beavers. So how does that all fit in? I don't know. And then at corner, C.R. Wright is a guy who we thought going into this past year was going to be someone who could really solidified himself as a starter, and that never happened. Prophet Brown has had his moments. Jacoby Covington has had his moments, but for the most part, this looks like another position that is sort of ripe for Humphrey and Nicholson to come in and win those jobs.
That's why I think that you have to assume that the guys who come in as transfers are sort of given first shot at winning that job. Certainly, John Humphrey, I think you pencil in right now as a starter. I would be shocked if he's not a starter. Next to him, DeCarlos Nicholson, just a little bit more up in the air. But like Kamari Ramsey and Akili Arnold are not coming to not be starters. The transfers will play a heavy role in this group. But you do have guys like Jalen Smith and Christian Pierce, and you do have guys like Jacoby Covington and you know, I think Prophet Brown has shown real promise at times. This group there's a lot of versatility there. I wouldn't be surprised to see safeties and corners and nickels sort of being a mixed bag again in terms of like who is playing where. It's hard to pull all the threads loose and sort of get a straight line. I think that's why this spring is going to be really fascinating, because we'll at least hear a little bit about who's running with the first team and who's running with the second team and sort of what those combinations look like. It's just like, I want Jalen Smith on the field. I want Jacoby Covington on the field. Can they both get on the field? And I think it's fair to want Zion Branch on the field. I'm just not sure where he's going to be at in terms of the injury recovery quite yet. But
yeah,
how do you get those guys on the field while also accounting for transfers who did not come to not start?
Arnold and Ramsey. Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting too, that there's a lot of, this sort of feels like the opposite to me of the receiving core.
Yes.
Now the receiving core is so thin. There's a lot of guys that like, yeah, you have hope for, but like, it's so thin, that it feels like all of them are going to get an opportunity. This is that, It's so sort of deep suddenly that it's refreshing how deep the secondary is.
Well, okay,
and how many different options. And I think it gives SC a very good chance to make sure that there has to be a secondary of four or five dudes here as starters who are solidified, like, starting level players, which SC did not have a year ago outside of Kalen Bullock, right? Outside of Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
Like there's too many guys there. They can't have those dudes rise to the top and be the cream.
Yes. But I mean, so much of that,
right? I mean, we said this last year that the defense had to get better. But were they being developed?
No, but that's the problem with last year's defense.
They truly can't get worse than they were last year.
No, that's the problem. The problem with last year's defense is USC had just as many bodies with potential going into last year. I think the last five years we've gone into, I mean, every year that Dante Williams has been recruiting for USC, we've gone into the year looking at and saying, man, USC has a ton of depth in the secondary because they've recruited the secondary very, very strongly. But none of those guys were getting developed in any way, shape, or form. And so we'd say that, and then dudes would play and they wouldn't be good. So then we'd be trying to like replace them with the next guy up, and then they'd play. And same thing happened at linebacker. It's like, you know, replace this guy with this guy because we haven't seen him play. And then we see him play and we're like, well, that's why he wasn't playing. All of that kind of stuff, I hope, is resolved a little bit with the new coaching staff, mm-hmm. because they have so much to work with here. They have so much to work with here. And while I suspect that Akili Arnold and Kamari Ramsey are, for instance, penciled in as your starting safeties next year, if they, like, competition for those places could be really fierce if they're not up to the task, because Zion Branch and Christian Pierce and Jalen Smith do have a lot of talent and will be pushing to justify a starting place. Like, and at cornerback, like, you know, if DeCarlos Nicholson isn't carrying the water that he needs to carry, like, Prophet Brown and Trequan Fagans and these guys are going to want to compete there and do that. And a coaching staff that knows how to harness the talent that these guys have won't have any issues in the secondary the way that USC's past coaching staff had issues in the secondary.
Yeah, let's talk about the front side of the defense, which is our last question. Who rushes the quarterback? I think this one's going to be interesting because of sort of the defense that Danton Lynn was running at UCLA. He had a Leatu Latu. And we've talked about before, who's going to be USC's Leatu Latu? Do they need a Leatu Latu? Do they have to replace him one for one in this defense? I don't know. Danton Lynn's defensive coordinator history is a year of one. So it's hard to sit here and say that, well, he can perform as a great defensive coordinator without a Latu, or he doesn't need that role, or that role is his like, it's all these are going to be questions that I think we're just going to sort of figure out. Either way, I think the biggest question, roster construction wise, or who are those edge rushers? Because the way it is now, Rajon Davis, you would say, is an inside linebacker, yes. Right? Mason Cobb, probably an inside linebacker.
Yes.
Eric Gentry?
Inside, yes.
Inside? Easton Mascarenhas Arnold?
Inside, yes.
Inside? You got the two incoming freshmen, Newbie and Desmond Stevens, to be, those are labeled as linebackers, presumably inside linebackers, but maybe they'll be outside guys. We'll see how they fit in the spring. The only out-and-out edge rushers that you can say with 100% certainty on this roster as it stands are two incoming freshmen, Lorenzo Cowan and Cameron Fountain. There's Nate Clifton. Hold on. There's Nate Clifton transferring in from Vanderbilt. He's someone who has said in interviews that he's willing to play at every single position on the defense, on the defensive line. Okay. Let's just say for chits and gigs that he is an edge rusher, and you put him into that category too. But then does Anthony Lucas become an edge rusher?
I don't know. I think, like, Anthony Lucas is questions. I think this is where you're getting this wrong. Anthony Lucas is an edge rusher in this defense.
Okay. But I need to see how, like, this is part of the confusion for me. Like, I need to see how this defense all comes to be. Like this is what is going to be so fascinating to see how everything goes, is that it's so, everything is so sort of fluid here. And we've seen it where every defensive coordinator that USC has sort of organizes the defense differently. Oh, this guy's going to be a rush end. This guy's going to be a defensive end who's not a rush end, or whatever. He's a five technique. This guy's a seven. Like, all of this feels like new waters yet again with Danton Lynn there. That's mostly what I mean. I don't mean that Anthony Lucas is not literally rushing the quarterback.
I think that that's like, I don't care about positions.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't care about where somebody is labeled on a depth chart or whatever. It's about your impact from whatever technique you're lining up as, and whether or not they can create a front that that gives you that opportunity to get after the quarterback and to be productive in that way. And I think that USC has brought in guys who can be mixed and matched into that role. The question is whether that they can do it at a level that maybe isn't Leao Tulatu, because that's not fair.
Sure.
But that can mimic the impact that allows the defense around him, around Leao Tulatu, to succeed. My biggest anxiety about bringing in Danton Lynn is that, as you said, his experience is one of one, and that one involved Leao Tulatu being on the field. What does his defense look like when he doesn't have Leao Tulatu rushing the passer?
He's got to bear Alexander, though. It's sort of like the peak of his talent is sort of at a different position in the front, which I think is going to make it a little
right. Well, okay, then I'll put it a different way. What is Danton Lynn's defense without a defender in the front seven that is capable of getting 13 sacks in a season?
I don't know.
And not just that, because like I think our attention on Leao Tulatu diminishes a little bit of the work that like someone like Gabriel Murphy did, where
the Murphy twins absolutely played a vital role.
Between Leao Tulatu and the Murphy twins, Gabriel and Grayson, that was 26 sacks between those three players.
Right.
Who are the three players on USC's roster currently who can combine for 26 sacks? That is the question that USC needs to answer in spring camp, or in spring and fall camp. I think in theory, you look at Bear Alexander and Anthony Lucas and you want to ask that of them. You look at Nate Clifton and in theory, you can add him to that group. In theory, you can have just the presence of Isaiah Rakes free up more opportunities for someone like Bear Alexander or Anthony Lucas or Devin Tompkins to come in and live up to some of the potential that we've been hearing about in the background. For Elijah Hughes to break out in the way that you want somebody like Elijah Hughes to break out. Like, can I envision
Braylon Shelby?
Yeah. Braylon Shelby, yes. Can I envision a trio of Jamil Muhammad, Braylon Shelby, and Bear Alexander doing that job for USC? I can. But every year I've gone in to a USC defense with that potential vision, and I've been slightly disappointed at times. If not from the literal production that USC has gotten out of those guys, but like the importance of that production, because USC is only a couple years removed from having Tuli Tupelotu being a 13 sack guy, but Tuli Tupelotu was sort of on an island where he was getting those 13 sacks, but that was he was getting double teamed or he was getting taken out of plays, and so despite having 13 sacks, his impact wasn't actually at a 13 sack level in the sense of, sure, teams were able to fixate on him and then not have to worry too much about the rest. So
you needed Tuli and Bear together?
Yes, or Tuli and a fully formed Tuli Tupelotu and a fully formed Drake Jackson together. USC hasn't necessarily had that, and that's what USC needs. Now, I think theoretically you have dudes who can become that, who can rise up to that. There's clear potential in guys like Braylon Shelby and Elijah Hughes.
Yeah,
it's just that there's so much potential talk. The only defensive lineman or person in the front seven that I feel supremely confident about is Bear Alexander. And even Bear Alexander needs to be a more consistent player, needs to be a more consistent player.
Well, because everybody else, you look at statistically, had a great game or two early on in the season and then sort of backed off. We saw that with Bird. We saw that with Muhammad. I just issue a slight correction here. I said that there were on our list here only three edge rushers. I'm a moron. I just completely skipped over Jamil Muhammad and Braylon Shelby. So there's five.
Yeah.
But I think more than anything, I think what we're going to learn once they put out the spring roster is how they will organize the defense. I think it's going to be interesting to see who gets an outside linebacker designation or whatever.
What designations at all we get?
I think those are going to be questions. We know that, it's not exactly that spring camp is going to be, open and easy to see and all these things. So I don't know that we're going to have answers until September when SC is lining up on, last day of August or whatever. September 3rd, whatever day it is. When Monday night or Sunday night when SC is lining up against LSU. I don't know. September 1st. Okay, so all of these are just going to be questions. So we'll see. We'll see how it all comes to be. Speaking of questions, we got questions from you guys in the mailbag.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANDOMTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANDOMTROY for the first deposit match of up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've got mail.
All right, let's start here with a email from Big Poppy 55. Hello, Alicia and Michael. I watched your last episode this weekend. I just want to say thank you for answering my questions and having fun with it. I started listening to your podcast recommendations. Keep talking F1. I'm listening now. Question, what is your favorite way to or form to eat potatoes? And how about this USC women's basketball team? Forza Ferrari and fight on Big Poppy 55. Best way to eat potatoes is fries.
I mean,
it's the only way. Not literally, but It's the way.
The literal
baked potatoes and mashed potatoes are gross.
No, see, and this is where you take it too far.
I don't take it too far. They're gross.
The best form of a potato is a French fry. Just straight up, it's yes. a French fry. That's fine. But potatoes are great. Like I'm like Bubba from Forrest Gump. Like I like mashed potatoes. I like baked potatoes. I like scallop potatoes. I like
scallop potatoes,
hash browns. I like tater tots. I like home style potatoes. I like roast potatoes. I like potato tacos.
Okay, hold on. Can I go on my biggest potato pet peeve rant here?
No.
I can't stand restaurants and the word hash browns.
Okay, this is fair because
tell me what the hell your hash browns are.
Restaurants.
What are your hash browns?
All think hash brown means a different thing.
Some people's hash browns are tater tots.
Yeah.
Some people's hash browns are tater tot patties. Some people's hash browns are those weird, stringy, disgusting things. Some people's hash browns are home fries. What the hell are hash browns? Like,
Yeah, describe what you mean. Describe your preparation.
I don't know
for
if I
hash
want
browns,
hash browns until I go on Yelp and look at the pictures of what the hell your hash browns look like. Yeah,
that's fair.
Drives me nuts.
I'm just laughing because I just saw the question from Tim in LA.
We're gonna get to it.
Okay.
We're gonna get to it. Get ready. We're getting to it. Trust me. Mark of the chat says this means nothing, but I was playing NCAA 14 and I won the Heisman with Marquise Lee, 64 catches, 1,962 yards and 34 touchdowns. That's a hell of a season.
Only 1,900? You couldn't break the 2,000 yard mark?
34 TDs on 64 catches? That's nuts. Sounds like a
that's beautiful.
Metric
is what that
crap
is.
Ton of four verts.
Yep. Yeah.
Love it.
That's fun.
Another super chat from Alex. Thank you. Miller Moss is a rock star. He elevated the play of everyone around him. He has been underestimated all his life. His ceiling is Heisman. His floor is second round in the NFL. The offensive line will be a lot better because of Miller Moss. I
love it.
You hope that you are right. If for SC's sake, you absolutely hope that you're right.
I will say before the Holiday Bowl, the glimpses of Miller Moss that I had gotten did not impress me. The Holiday Bowl changed my opinion of what his ceiling could be.
So we got a question from SJ. If Miller Moss's comp is Cody Kessler, would you be satisfied?
I would sign up for that in an instant today. Cody Kessler is one of the most underrated USC quarterbacks in a long time.
I think Cody Kessler in this offense would be very prolific and put you in a position to win games. Yes, 1,000%. Especially if you can pair him with a good defense. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously going to be a gigantic question, right? But speaking of the letter M for Miller Moss, let me give you one. You know what I think Miller Moss's ceiling is? Mac Jones.
Yes.
Am I wrong?
Yes. And you know what I hate is that a lot of times I'll hear a comparison and I'll do like a physical comparison in my head and go like, yeah, white dude quarterback. And it'll be like, am I just doing that because they're both white dude quarterbacks?
If Miller Moss was Mac Jones.
Yeah. You'd
take that a million times over.
Yeah.
Would you not?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new way of saying like what we're saying when we're like, I think what we're saying when we're talking about like a Mac Jones or a Cody Kessler or whatever, it's just sort of a new way to talk about like a system quarterback, like a quarterback who can ably run the system that they're in and maybe won't elevate it in their own way where they could succeed in any circumstance, but like are perfectly productive quarterbacks who facilitate the playmaking of the players around them.
Yeah. 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 I agree. All right. West Texas Mike says, you people started at 4:30? Who starts a podcast at 4:30? Us when Love is Blind starts at 6 o'clock. We had to get in here and be done. So that way all who participate in Love is Blind reunion night can be available for that. Also, we were gonna go at 4 o'clock and then we decided to push it back to 4:30.
So, yeah.
4:30. Weird time. I know. Ron Murdy says, I wonder who will be starting at running back. Running back, an interesting position because the Trojans are needing to break in a new starter. Quentin Joyner's back. Marian Peterson is back. But in comes Jaquavius Marks from South Carolina. Brian Jackson is the early enrollee. So there'll be four guys to keep an eye on during spring.
I'd like a little bit more depth than that personally. I think that Jaquavius Marks comes in to start. And then it's a question of, for me, I actually think there aren't that many questions at running back this year. I think Jaquavius Marks comes in to start. Mm-hmm. Marks comes in to start. I think Quinton Joyner is a pretty clear number two. The only real question I have is whether or not Marian Peterson can make himself 2B or if he will be a clear 3.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to a question from Jeff. Mac Jones, he's so overrated in college and he was an NFL bust. He was. Also, Jeff says, I hope you guys eat your words when Miller is invited to New York City. Mac Jones was invited to New York City. So if Miller Moss is Mac Jones, Mac Jones had Alabama in the playoff.
Mac Jones was the number 3 pick in the NFL draft.
Yes. And if someone is a draft bust, who cares? That's not your job.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that they're a bad quarterback.
Your job is to produce the quarterback that gets picked that high.
Yeah.
Which Alabama did. Alabama got a lot out of Mac Jones.
I will say this now. If you told me right now that Miller Moss got an invite to New York.
Massive success.
I wouldn't be that surprised.
I wouldn't either because you know who his quarterback coach is?
Lincoln Riley. Exactly. Lincoln
Riley, yeah. Heard of that guy. Yeah, he's pretty solid at doing that. Greg says, which position group do you feel the most confident in and the least? Who you got?
I am most confident in, I think, the safeties. I think USC, whatever combination of safeties they come out with, will mm-hmm. be a solid set of safeties. There's a nice mix of potential and also proven production, familiarity with Danton Lynn's scheme in one particular case. That I think the safety group is nothing to worry about. Offensive line.
Yeah.
Offensive line. There are big question marks at linebacker like they are every year because who the heck knows what that group will, if somebody can finally figure out how to make a USC linebacker play well as a unit and not all be collectively terrible. Like that will be fun to watch, hopefully. But when it comes down to it, offensive line is the one that I don't have all the answers. I think I can envision what that starting five looks like, but I also can envision what two or three injuries to that starting five looks like. And it's worrisome.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I fully agree. I think the safeties, there's too many guys there for there not to be a good group at the end. You would hope at least. And I think you can say the offensive line. You can also say linebackers. I think you can make an argument for for wide receivers, not overly confident in. Either way, I think it's a good thing that there's not one easily obvious answer, but maybe it is a concern that there's multiple potential answers for concerning the unit. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. All right. We got a YouTube comment. From user X, whole lot of different characters, numbers, a lot of numbers. Where's the princess's fancy chair? So this question is about Jessie, who has now moved
who has abandoned her bed.
She's got a new bed. Okay. So hold on. Let's back this up a bit. It said, where is the princess's fancy chair? So if you've watched us on YouTube, you know that we've had an armchair sitting behind Alicia in which Jesse, the dog, our beautiful, beautiful border collie, sits in. Now, Alicia, this starts our new segment.
Oh, I can't believe I married a serial killer.
Here's the thing, folks. Alicia calls that armchair a couch. We have moved said couch to the living room, but she calls that couch the fancy chair that this YouTube commenter mentions is now in the other room, and Alicia has created a bed, a new bed, which that's a whole other long story of how she's done that. But
I upcycled a mattress is the short of that.
Yes. I jokingly hit the button as a new segment of, oh no, I've married a serial killer, because I think this is going to be a new segment in which we share things the other person has done that we think is serial killer caliber.
My favorite.
One of these things is you calling an armchair a couch. Okay. Number two of these things is we got a new bed. We upgraded from a queen to a king bed, which is the greatest thing in the world.
Best decision we've ever done.
Oh my God. A king? It's like I can starfish in the afternoon. It's wonderful. But here's the deal. In order to, instead of just donating the couch, or I mean, sorry, the couch. Now you're getting me.
Now
the old mattress, or finding a way to dispose of it, calling 1-888 junk or whatever that phone number is, whatever it is, you've decided that you are going to dismember this thing with literally a butcher knife and cut it into little bits. So this new bed behind Alicia that Jesse has been on is part of our old mattress, which is a sign of what you, I guess, would intend to do with a dead body if you were a serial killer, which is terrifying.
My original plan, because I am an avoidant person of having to do things in an official sort of way, my resistance to us dragging that damn mattress out to the street and having it get picked up by the city was, well, you know, what if it's just memory foam? Like, what if I just cut it up and disposed of it in the trash cans in the trash bins in our building? And that's, I mean, admittedly serial killer. Like, this is how, yes, you would dismember a body and get rid of it and piecemeal in the trash.
Oh, I can't believe I married a serial killer.
I watch a lot of true crime. No, okay, but I am very happy with the upcycling that I've done with the mattress. I created a new dog bed for Jesse, which, for the listeners at home on the podcast form, we have a little USC blanket over the top of it. She lays on it, except when she decides to get off of it and lay spread out on the floor next to it, like she's currently doing. I created a new pillow for myself. I created pillows for our
body pillows.
A couple of body pillows. I created
pillows for the couch.
Pillows for the couch, because we didn't have good pillows for the couch.
Sorry, for an actual couch.
For the actual, like, for the love seats, yeah. The two love seats that we have.
Yes.
I created cushions for our outdoor patio set.
Yes, and then she came in from the patio and said, "That couch out there is so comfortable." And I said, "Excuse me?" And she said, "That couch is so comfortable out there." And I said, "What couch are you talking about?" And she's like, "Oh, the new cushions that I put on my patio chair." And I said, "That is not a couch." To which I went to Twitter and tweeted about this, and people were flooding my mentions about how you were insane for calling an armchair.
Okay, to be fair, I fully admit the proper name for the thing is an armchair. But in my mind, anything that you sit upon that is stuffed, like a stuffed kind of thing, is just a couch. Like,
this is
like a lazy boy recliner person. Is a couch. A couch is a couch. An armchair is a couch if it's got enough stuffing. So, like, the patio chair that I have set up with the new cushion, so the new memory foam cushions.
Is it a BBL? Are you have an internal couch?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes. It's cushion. The, the, I associate anything that's cushioned, more cushioned than not cushioned, is a couch to me.
Okay, so now let's get us to the question from Tim in LA that says, okay, I need to know what was with the disagreement that led to Michael's Twitter poll today, in which I put, when buttoning a shirt, do you start from the top or from the bottom? By the way, I will clue everybody in on the results of that, but Alicia, do you go from the top or the bottom when you button a shirt?
Bottom. Bottoms up. What do you call that kind of shirt,
Michael? I can't believe I married a serial killer. Serial killer.
What do you call that kind of shirt, Michael?
It's a, first of all, I would call it a dress shirt.
If you were using the name that uses the word buttons, which name do you use?
Realistically, I'd probably call it a buttoned shirt, but then I would say it's a button-up shirt.
Yes, a button-up shirt. A shirt that one buttons.
But that doesn't mean literally you up. Button it up from the bottom.
You button it up from the bottom the way that you a zip-up is from the bottom. You start at the bottom and you go up.
No.
And it makes sense, too, because everyone's talking about how, like, oh, you start from the top, but then no one actually buttons the top button, so they have to go down to the second button. But that's how you end up putting the wrong button in the wrong
slit. When you start at the bottom, you end up with the wrong thing. Let's go to the Twitter poll. The Twitter poll says 68.7%
start at
from
the bottom.
Top.
If you start at the bottom, you find the bottom button. You go from the very edge of the shirt down and you start from the bottom button. Now you have the very bottom button.
My God.
Now on the other side of the shirt, you travel up and you see, okay, this is the very bottom slit. There's no mistaking it. That's where you start. Then every button you go up, you are in the correct buttoning place. Where if you are starting from the top and not doing the top button, now you're sort of having to guess, like, am I really on the second button and the second slit, or am I missing? Like, every time I've ever buttoned a shirt from the top, I've gotten the buttons misaligned. So that's why I started doing the buttoning from the bottom. Button from the bottom.
Jeff in the chat says button down shirt. See, the interesting thing.
See, this is where the debate started, Jeff.
I think I would call it a button up shirt. Like, I really, this is all from a TikTok. Rest in peace, TikTok. That was like a dress shirt. And it's like, what do you call this? Which I would probably say button up shirt, but I will say that a baseball jersey is called a button down. Famously, those are called button downs. But then if I said a button down, I picture a baseball jersey. I don't picture a dress shirt.
I've never used the term button down.
Bottom, baby.
I've never used the term button down. I'm aware that this is a term that people use, but it's not button down for me. It's we call it a button up. I mean, to be fair, like you, we always just called it a dress shirt or a button shirt. Like, direction wasn't necessarily the point. But the point is,
Starting from the bottom
just makes sense. It's a process that is foolproof.
No. Foolproof. Like, no. If I started from the bottom, trust me, I assure you I would get it wrong.
Well, that's
if you start
user
from the top,
error.
You do not get it wrong.
That's user error on your part.
No.
Especially when we all acknowledge that most people aren't buttoning the top button. So, like, it makes sense, like a zip
up. But hold on. The top button is usually in a different spot to where the rest of the buttons start. So you don't even acknowledge the top button to even exist. So you just start here.
So then you're just going on vibes. Like, I hope this is the second button.
No, but it's obvious that it's the second button. It's the top button. That's top usable button. You know what I mean? Cause the top button is in the collar.
That's still, you're still having to guess on vibe. If you just start from the bottom, no matter what, you're going to get to the, because dudes show off their chest too. I was going to say maybe this is a female thing, but like, it's not just the top button that you don't button sometimes. You might go two or three buttons down, depending on the shirt, depending on the fit, and depending on the occasion. So like, you start from the bottom and then you button up to the point.
I don't have the chest hair for that.
I mean, some guys do. Like, that's a thing for some guys, so I don't know. But like, certainly for women, you're buttoning up to a point that is then the look that you're looking for. which isn't always just not buttoning the top button. They're, you know.
Greg says, can I spend the night at your guys' house so I can hear these arguments in person? Tim has hit us with a super chat. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
And says, this is way better than I ever could have imagined. I'm happily sponsoring the continuation of this segment. Touchdown USC says that this was my favorite part of the podcast. And then there was another question that I missed here where Ron Murdy says, is the Zach Lasagna argument all over again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Either way, welcome.
This was a heavy Michael thinks Alicia is a serial killer segment. The next time, maybe I'll be bringing receipts.
Okay.
For Michael is a serial killer.
You get to press the button.
Okay. Next week, I get to press the button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe I married a serial killer.
Yeah. All right. It's 5:53. We got to run if we're going to watch this Love is Blind reunion.
We do.
Until then, until next time, until next week, we'll be back. Talk more USC football. Hit us with your emails, rantroyfansite.com, phone number 818-643-7227. Until then, we will see you.
Yeah.
See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.